The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's time to bring out the better worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts are making a big difference in the world. In fact, that's why we call them Better Worldians. Speaking of Better Worldians, let me now introduce you to my co-hosts Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. Thanks for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with merit took public a national marketing firm. Giving back has always been really important to Dad, who supports many causes, especially disadvantaged children and their families. By the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 33 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by more than 2.9 million people. And in the month of May, we're supporting One Hope Foundation, a social impact foundation that's given over $1 million to select nonprofits that are helping people in need around the world. When our players complete 300,000 good deeds in the game this month, we'll donate funds to support great causes like clean drinking water for 1,500 people for a year.
This week on Better Worldians Radio, we're speaking with Stephen Ballman, author of Possible, a blueprint for changing how we change the world. Stephen Ballman is the president and CEO of World Relief, an international relief and development organization that serves more than 5 million vulnerable people each year through more than 100,000 church-based volunteers. Stephen's pursuit of justice led him to transition from a successful career in the Fortune 100 sector to Africa, where he directed relief and development programs for nearly a decade before returning to the United States to lead World Relief's global operations. Stephen lives to see people everywhere rise to the call of justice and give their lives in ways that empower the poor towards real change, a journey he continues to pursue. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you so much, Ray. It's great to be with you all.
It's great to have you on board. So let me start for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write your book, Possible.
Yeah, I often get the question when I'm traveling and speaking and meeting people. I get the question, you know, what can I do when I talk about, you know, mothers around the world, even as close to us as Haiti, that have to choose which child to feed, or fathers who really can't find any work at all to put food on the table for their family or to provide an education for their kids. And, you know, these stories, even the story of Lake Nepal and what we're hearing about there in the terms of the disaster and the plight of the people there, or some of the chronic wars around the world, it's natural for all of us to feel overwhelmed or even desperate, and certainly wanting to help in some way. So I get the question most often, what can I do? And it's hard to answer that question in 2 minutes or less. And so this book really was birthed out of that question, what can I do? And there are so many things that people can do, all of us can do, whether were a professional in the relief and development world, or were a, you know, an artist or an entrepreneur or a mother or a student. And there are practical things that all of us can do. And so the book is really an answer to that question. I set out to write a book that was meant to be helpful to people. And the response I'm getting so far is that it is helpful. So I'm encouraged by that.
Well, it's a great book. I really encourage people to read it. You'll find a lot of inspiration there. Now, that you write in your book that you're convinced that people really want to help end suffering in the world, but they're just not sure how. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you say that?
Yeah, the people I meet, you know, every day, I meet a lot of people who care, and I think sometimes, you know, when we see the news or we hear about things and we don't, you know, see the action or giving like we had hoped, I think it's a mistake to assume that people don't care. I just meet a lot of people who really do care and empathize with people who are suffering around the world. So, you know, I think the greater problem is vision and understanding and on the how and what we can tangibly, practically do. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of that vision and part of that knowledge and understanding is how complex things are, and that it is not a quick fix. If it were easy, we would have, you know, a lot of folks throughout history and today would have figured out a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I believe a lot of people care, and they're looking for some tangible things in terms of what we can do. Mm-hmm. And part of that is who we must become and how we see the world. And you know, it's a bit of your mission, mm-hmm. at Better Worldian, is to actually help educate and help people to appreciate the world so that mm-hmm. we can change who we are a bit and mm-hmm. so that we can become more relevant as we seek to do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see people on a weekly basis that we've had probably, I guess, 60 or 70 episodes, and we can testify and provide strong evidence that people do care, and we talk to those people on a regular basis about what they're doing to channel that care in ways that are, you know, unusual, amazing, and very, very inspiring. So we concur that people do want to do something for the most part. I don't think that, and you know, there's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and what they do to really sort of unravel the complexity of getting water to people and getting actual infrastructure to people and that type of thing. You really understand just how difficult sometimes making it happen on a bigger scale, it really is. So we concur 100%. Talk to us a little bit about your wife, what you and your wife got involved in this first. When you started, you really were looking to just spend 6 months in Africa, and that turned into a 6-year stay. So can you tell how that whole came about?
Yeah, I'd love to. You mentioned your wife is your life partner. My wife, same, and has been a mentor to me and still is. And we were we grew up in Wisconsin and really hadn't had much exposure internationally. And I was working in business and thriving there. My wife was a teacher, and she said, "Steve, why don't we volunteer and just take a leave of absence before we had kids and do some volunteer work?" I said, "Sure, maybe we get more involved in our local church in Madison." And she said, "No, I had something, you know, something more in mind, like Africa." And I said, "Wow." I said, "I thought Africa was for, you know, don't you have to be a missionary or particularly a Bible translator," I was thinking, mm-hmm. "or a medical doctor." So I didn't really see a need for a teacher and a business person like myself. Well, she asked for 3 years in a row, and I said no three times. The fourth time I said, "Okay, let's maybe we should consider this." This is a couple years later, and I said, "You know, there's a break in my career here. I was up for promotion, and I could put it on hold and take 6 months out and go abroad." And I knew she was passionate about this. She had done some short-term missions work, actually, with our local church down in Central America. So we went abroad to Africa, and we started in Ghana, West Africa, which is one of the most amazing countries in the world. Incredible people, friendliest people in the world, and everything changed for us there. Everything changed for me. I began to see sort of this incredible juxtaposition, paradox really, of people who were on the whole happier than me and more resilient, and I would also say had a deeper level of faith in me. At the same time, many people in Ghana, especially then, were in desperate need and living in poverty, and there was diseases and all sorts of things. And then, so that was a major sort of conversion. Second, I call it my second conversion, the first to God, the second to his people, and particularly his people who suffer, that I really was unaware of. And then thirdly, I went through this transition of understanding the needs in Ghana and later across much of the world, and recognized that it's not just medical doctors and Bible translators, but strategists and thinkers and all sorts of gifts and strengths. And so we found ourselves reconsidering our calling, our careers, and at that juncture, having built some relationships and learned from some Africans and some friends that we were working with and seeing the needs, it was a pretty easy decision to say, hey, let's throw our lives towards this and become students and learn along the way and see if there's something we can help on some of these great great issues of our day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we stayed for 6 years, and we went for 6 months, stayed for 6 years, and everything changed, and stayed in it for the last 20 or so.
Oh, my goodness. Now, a big message in your book is that anyone can make a difference, even the most unlikely heroes. Can you talk a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, two thoughts there. First is that and anybody who's lived a chunk of life, even a handful of years, when you look at your classmates in college or high school and you go through a bit of life and then you look back, often it's a bit surprising as to who has done what. And there's a narrative in the Bible, which is my faith tradition based in the Bible, but there's a narrative even in history of people like Abraham Lincoln, the least likely person to be, a lawyer, let alone a president, let alone someone who really saved our country from ruin and overturned slavery. And in the Bible, you've got, characters like David, the least likely of the brothers. And so there's a narrative, and even in the movies, we love the story of the mm-hmm. of the Sam Gamgee or the Frodo that saves the day. Mm-hmm. So there's something there that we all should take note of, and that is if we feel inadequate, if we feel like we have nothing to offer, I would say to you and say to myself, hey, wait, shake yourself, grab your shoulders and say, look at all of history, look at how the God of the universe works. He loves the humble person that says, look, I'll give you my five loaves and two fish, a story mm-hmm. from the Bible. And if you can make something good out of that, I'm game. I'm ready mm-hmm. to say yes. So that's one level. Another way to tackle this would be simply this, and that is we tend to think like I did, which is, well, if you're going to change the world, you got to be a doctor or a Bible translator a radio talk show host or a relief and development expert like myself. But that's not true either. And the better question to ask is what do I have in my set of experiences? How have I been educated? Here's a great question. What do I love to do? I've got friends who love to cycle. They're cycling. They love bike riding, and they've taken that passion and they've ridden bikes and raised money and traveled to the Congo and done extraordinary things. So that intersection of passion and I call it wisdom, our experience, whether that comes through universities and training or whether it's more informal mm-hmm. through the arts or through trades, intersecting our wisdom and our passion together with our network of friends, boy, it's amazing what emerges there. Mm-hmm. And then intersecting that with some of the great causes of the day, mm-hmm. there's something that everyone can do. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting time to be alive because no one really needs to be left out when it comes to changing the world. And you guys know that because you're preaching this every day in your radio show and the work that you do. So it's inspiring.
Yeah, we have seen a lot of it. I just read just recently a book that highlighted a story with Mother Teresa, where you mentioned the doctor that that we all want to be, or the minister or somebody that's really built for this particular challenge, went over to India and completely trained in the medical profession, brought a team of people with him, And then excitingly, you know, approached Mother Teresa and said, what do you want me to do? And so different people were assigned different responsibilities. And then he was ushered through various rooms, one of which had serious problems with, you know, really ill leprosy, people with leprosy. And then also another room with that were, you know, dying in a very, very bad state. These people were in each of these rooms. He thought, this is where I'm going to bring my skills to the table. And then finally he was ushered through the kitchen, and they said, what are they going to put me to work in the kitchen? And at the very end, there was a door, and behind the kitchen was a dump. And they said, if you'll just take these two buckets and fill them regularly and go down about a block and a half and get rid of this garbage. And it was horrible. It had been sitting there for a long time. And he saw that the message was, we can all contribute, but maybe not the way that we thought we were going to contribute. So they had to be open to that. And as he saw that, he brought even more people back with the caveat that, look, don't be surprised what you're going to be asked to do. And be willing to do whatever it takes to do, because that may be the contribution that you're asked to do at that moment, and that's what you're bringing to the table. So it was an amazing story that I never heard before. So we're going to take a short break right now, but before we go, I want to take a moment to update you on change coming to Better Worldians Radio. Beginning in June, you can go to betterworldiansradio.com to hear new episodes. You can also browse our dozens of past shows featuring many inspiring Better Worldians. Mary Sue will talk more with possible author Stephen Bauman when we come back in just a moment.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds, make a difference, and have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them. It wasn't convenient, and it wasn't pretty, but they needed help. 12 more then joined this saint of the gutters. They were soon followed by over 4,000 other nuns who gave healing care in orphanages, AIDS hospices, and charity centers. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
I've always wanted a neighbor just like you.
I've always wanted to live
in a neighborhood with you.
So let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Since we're together, we might as well say,
would you be mine?
Could you be mine?
Won't you be my neighbor?
My neighbor?
Mr. Rogers passed along friendship in his neighborhood, hoping we would do the same. So let's get started. Friendship. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything. I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
You're listening to Better Worldians Radio. We're speaking with Stephen Bauman, author of Possible. And now, let me welcome back Stephen and Mary Sue.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Mary Sue. Great to be with you.
Great to chat with you. Now, you write in your book about complaint. What do you mean by complaint, and how do complaints help actually initiate change?
You know, we talk a lot about passion today, and you know, what are you passionate about? What lights your heart or your heart on fire? And if you ask people about things that they've done, you know, leaders, we were talking about Mother Teresa before, and what really drove her in. Often, more often than not, it begins with a complaint or a lament, and it's something that we look at and we understand and we stare at, and it's often through personal experience, whether it's a, you know, a person that's dying on the streets of India, or whether it's somebody who's hungry, or maybe it's a newspaper article or something you read or somebody your friend tells you about, and you just look at this and you think, this just cannot be. How can it be that, you know, a mother doesn't have enough food to feed her child? Or how can it be that a father is so desperate for money he sells his daughter for, you know, $50, the equivalent of $50, thinking that he's selling her to, it's an advance payment on her to be a nanny across the world? Or, and you get into those situations, and I think we're confronted with something, and particularly as Americans or as Westerners, and that is we can sort of turn and look away and say, ah, that can't be true. I can't busy myself, bother myself with that sort of tragedy. We can walk away, or we can take a hard, cold look at it and ask that question, how can this be? Yeah. How can this exist in my world today? And that can lead down a path of despair, and a dangerous path of despair. There's nothing I can do, and become cynical. Or it can become, I use the word complain, but it comes from an old ancient idea of a lament. And a lament is actually to get in there, to feel the pain, to feel that empathy, that pathos. But as you do, commit to doing something about it, offering a prayer to God to begin with. God, this can't be. This has to change. And saying yes even before you know exactly what to do, and that is saying yes to doing something about it. So that passion is often lit with a match of complaint, of lament, and, you know, like most things today, if we don't have a passion that really drives us, especially in some of these complicated issues, we'll run out of energy, and we'll give up. So I like to say, what's your complaint? What is it in the world that you just can't live with? What is it in your backyard, in your neighborhood, that you just cannot put up with?
Yeah, really, acts like a catalyst from what you're saying. You know, you feel the pain, and then you say, what can I do about that?
It does, and it motivates the heart, and it calls other people to help join you in the effort to make some change.
You know, Stephen, you say, and we also say here at Better Worldians Radio, that when you help people, you're happy. It makes you happier than people who don't do anything. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, there's been some great research coming out, you know, in recent years in the psychology field.
Yes, yes.
And you may be more familiar with it than I am.
Yeah, the whole positive psychology movement.
Yeah, it's fantastic because they're studying, I mean, for so many years they were studying, you know, depression and despair, and in neuroses and so on, but there's been, as of late, more studies on happiness, what makes us happy. And one of those conclusions in those studies is that people who are giving towards others, are doing something, whether it's philanthropy or charity or social engagement or justice issues, as a whole, other things, you know, the same, those people are happier people. So what, maybe it shouldn't surprise us that when we, you know, sort of lay down our lives and give it to someone else, which Jesus said, that therein you find your own life, you find your own happiness. So I think there's something really profound there.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's why we're all a bunch of happy people here and in your organization. You know, you're right that all people are called to make a difference, even those that are, you know, poor and suffering themselves. How can those in need help others and help themselves as well?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most important themes of the book, mm-hmm. and that is we tend to look upon the victim as someone who is helpless. And I would say there's very rare situations or instances when a victim isn't completely helpless, maybe in an emergency situation, but, you know, very few situations are emergency. So when you look at someone who is in poverty, first of all, I don't think we should call them poor because they're really not. They have a ton of resources, whether it's their faith, their resilience, their social network, their, you know, the capacity to work and the human capital and so on. So one of the purposes of the book is to help reframe poverty away from those who can help and those who must receive into we all have to do this together, and those who are trapped in poverty are the ones that have the greatest potential to change their own situation. And, you know, very simple things like in Malawi, for example, in Africa, we're working with mothers there who, you know, have struggled for a long time with malnutrition for their kids. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't, you know, just some basic training and capacity building to help them see how they can grow what they call groundnuts, what we call peanuts, which is super high in protein, and it's something that grows very well in Malawi, and it's not expensive. Just bringing in protein into the diet of their kids, you know, is a game changer when it comes to malnutrition. Now, the best thing about this is it's not somebody from the United States that got on a plane and brought, you know, a jar of peanut butter or a bag of peanuts. Absolutely not. It's actually, hey, you've got solutions right here, and you can do this as a mom, as a dad, and you can help, you know, help your kids become healthy. So, you know, simple things like that that begin with seeing people differently, not seeing people as poor and mm-hmm. rich, mm-hmm. but actually seeing us all as people, all of us with potential, all of us with resources, and how we bring those resources together to lift one another up out of dire situations.
Well, that's a great point. Most people don't view it that way, and I think that we all have to change our point of view and realizing people can really help themselves. How can we make doing good a habit, as you say in your book? What steps can we take?
Yeah, it's tempting for us to think about the one-off experience, whether you travel abroad or into your neighborhood or mm-hmm. or the one-off financial gift. But the call and the challenge, I think, for all of us is how do we live this out every day?
Yes.
And there are a number of things we can do there, but I think there's something very simple, actually. And it's maybe refreshing. It was refreshing for me a number of years ago when somebody said to me, I was working in business, and he said, you know, pick one thing that may bother you a little bit, back to that conversation about complaint, and just pray about it for 30 days. And just focus on the one thing and set aside the latest earthquake or the newspaper article about trafficking or food security in sub-Saharan Africa or whatever it is, and just pick the one thing that really concerns you. And at the time, this was years ago, there was a war happening in the Balkans, and I said, yeah, I'm going to pick that one thing. I'm having a hard time getting my mind around, you know, dads just like me that had that have to go to bed at night fearful that their house is going to be bombed. And so it really got to me, and it became a complaint. And I just started praying about that for 30 days, and my world changed. I mean, surprisingly, I started thinking about this all the time. I started reading different. I started talking to people. I met people sort of serendipitously that were Bosnian and Serbian. And long story, we ended up going over to Bosnia, then later Serbia during the war and doing some stuff with bringing in some aid and so on. But my point is simply this. If we pick just one thing and start thinking about it and giving some intellectual availability to that, and you know, how many things do I think about in a given day? On my downtime, if I just took 5 minutes and just thought about the one thing and started to understand it, and secondly, maybe give some of my own emotional availability to it. Maybe I pray about it. Maybe I try and meet someone. It becomes more of a habit. I'm gonna work on this one thing for the next few years rather than flitting from one thing to the next, and then it becomes quickly overwhelming, and then I end up not doing anything at all. So whether it's a prayer, whether it's just a simple magazine article, or maybe a Google search, or maybe trying to find somebody locally that comes from that country, or just spending more time in the coffee shop in the city, whatever it is, pick that one thing, stick with it, and make it a habit, and then let the situation let your situation surprise you. Maybe it's God that shows up in a very tangible way through people, through relationships, and you find yourself being involved in ways that you never dreamed.
Hmm. Yeah, really interesting. You know, I like the story that you mentioned in the book about you and your wife speaking with college students and asking them to use their field of study to help make a difference. Tell us more about that, because that's really interesting. What kinds of, you know, fields were they in, and how did they make a difference with them?
Yeah, that's a great question. We all are in different disciplines, and that's because we're all passionate about different things.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about being alive today is there's so much to choose from. We were in a university down in Texas and meeting with a group of students, and we were talking about a number of different justice issues, from poverty to trafficking to some environmental issues and climate change and how that affects the poor, people in poverty more than others. And we took a little pause and they just did a quick survey of who in the room and what their disciplines, what they were studying, what their majors were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. It was great sampling from, you know, nursing to hotel management to business, somebody in the science field, and then the last person said film. He was studying film.
Yeah.
And so then I asked them a question. I said, well, tell me what the justice issue is. Give me an example of a justice issue in your discipline. And, you know, the woman that said she was studying nursing said, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of them when it comes to healthcare and healthcare reform. This is back in when it was a very big political issue, and there's just justice issue. I mean, should people have access to health care? And, you know, I'm really passionate about this, and I want to work on it. Wow, we were all like, this is amazing. And then the kid with the major in film said, I don't see how it connects. And I said to his peers, I said, well, what do you guys think? And they said, well, I just watched a film last week or weeks ago called Born into Brothels about trafficking and the plight of women in trapped in a total unjust system. And if it weren't for this filmmaker, if I remember correctly, it was about using film with those very victims to help change their world and help them to reconsider the world. And so it was the medium of film that actually was the tool to help turn the situation or turn the story around for these women that were trapped in this situation. So in every discipline, you can almost – I have not come across a discipline yet where you can't ask that question. What are the justice issues? Who's left out and why?
Hmm.
And how can you use your discipline, your passion to turn it around for those very same people? It's a great question to ask, and it's an important one because we often tend to think, I've got to become something else. I've got to do something different. I've got to quit my job.
Yeah.
When in fact, I don't think that's the answer. I think if everybody quit their job and became – you know, a missionary or relief and development worker, then I think everything would shut down and we would miss the point. So
Well, very eye-opening. You know, you write your book about everyday heroes, and I really like that story about Rose. Could you tell everybody about that?
Yeah, it's a great story. Rose is a woman from Kenya, and she's a mother and a grandmother and a businesswoman, and she gathers with her 15 sisters once a week just outside of Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
And they pray together, they worship together, and when they're done, they all pull out their savings, and they put a box in the middle of their circle, and each of them may pull out a dollar or two and save a little extra money. It goes into the box. They fill out a book, like a passbook, and stamp it official. And there's a president of the group, which is Rose. There's a secretary. There's a treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it is, it's a savings group. And some people call it a savings circle. And each week they save a little bit of money, and they put it together in a pot in this lock box, this safe box. And then anyone from the group can borrow from that box for a number of things. They can maybe pay school fees, or if there's a sudden expense at the clinic and some medicine, or borrow, you know, $25, $30 to buy some inventory, or even to start a small business. And so it becomes a community, but also a bank. It's their own bank. And the ones that borrow have to pay back a little bit of interest. And that interest goes into the box, and that interest is then shared amongst the whole group, so they become their own bank. And the reason why I like that story so much is when we see Rose, you meet a woman that's got a beautiful smile and dressed in, you know, wonderful colors. If you look at her statistics, how much money she makes in a year, how she's lived a life, her level of education, by those standards, we would say she's in poverty.
Right.
But you've got a woman here who leads 16 other women. She started her own business, is helping other women start businesses. She leads them in song and often teaches from the Bible, so she's a pastor, a theologian of sorts.
That's amazing.
And there's another part of her story that's amazing. She uses some of her own money that she makes in her business to take in orphans, because there's a lot of orphans in Kenya and all throughout Africa. So she's a caretaker of orphans, and she's giving money to them. So in some ways, she's a philanthropist. So a woman that, on paper, by the World Bank standards, would be way below the poverty line. But when you meet her and see what she's doing, she's a philanthropist, she's a theologian, she's an entrepreneur, and she's a caretaker of orphans.
That's amazing.
She's the kind of person that is changing the world. And I tend to I feel my calling is to give my life to create more roses.
Mm-hmm. More roses.
Wonderful.
More roses for the world. That's a great way of putting it. We're going to have to take a short break right now. But when we return, we'll talk more with Stephen Bauman, author of Possible. In the meantime, for our listeners, if you're a fan of Better Orleans Radio, then perhaps you might want to check out our social enterprise, A Better World. This is a social game on Facebook whose mission is to uplift and brighten the world. Our goal with everything we do there is do good, have fun, change the world. And so we're committed to creating some really awesome digital products designed with that purpose in mind through optimism, altruism, and charity. And so far, we've garnered 33 million good deeds that have been done in this social game by more than 2.9 million people. So please check us out at abetterworld.com. In the meantime, we'll be right back.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything. I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
I've always wanted a neighbor just like you.
I've always wanted to live
in a neighborhood with you.
So let's make the most of this beautiful day.
Since we're together, we might as well say,
would you be mine?
Could you be mine?
Won't you be my neighbor?
My neighbor?
Mr. Rogers passed along friendship in his neighborhood, hoping we would do the same. So let's get started. Friendship. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com. She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them. It wasn't convenient, and it wasn't pretty, but they needed help. 12 more then joined this saint of the gutters. They were soon followed by over 4,000 other nuns who gave healing care in orphanages, AIDS hospices, and charity centers. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Stimulating talk gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast. All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back now with Stephen Bauman, author of Possible.
Hi, Stephen. This is Greg.
Greg, great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, you write in your book, you talk about how, you know, it's one thing to understand how change happens. It's another thing to make change happen. You talk about making that spark happen and, you know, enacting change. I want to quote your book directly, if you don't mind. You're talking about how people think that change can be a slow-moving, gradual experience. And sometimes that's true, you say. But, quote, more often change comes only after it's been set in motion by a collision, an act of outrageous compassion, a season of unforeseen suffering, or even a surprising offense. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I think we, you know, I like to approach change as, let me pick up a book and learn something and maybe insightful and then apply that to my life. And I'd like to think that's the way I most often change, but I think it's the least often.
Mm-hmm.
The times that I've changed the most in my life have been two primary ways. One is through hard times, mm-hmm. and I don't think anybody would refute that. The hard times change us, and seasons of unforeseen suffering, a shock. You know, my younger sister, she died 2-3 years ago now at age 41. She
was
a close friend, and she died suddenly, and she was pregnant with a third child. And that led to a whole lot of reflection and thinking through about my life, more along the lines of, you know, interesting enough, it was her death, and I gave part of the eulogy. And a eulogy is very different than a resume.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody pointed this out, I think it was David Brooks in his latest book, his recent book, that, you know, I just start to think about my life very differently as a result of that suffering. And same is true in another way, and that is when someone is surprisingly compassionate and maybe in a situation where somebody should give you what is due, maybe not treat you, maybe in situations where I have not been as kind as I should to my wife, Belinda, and or I take her for granted, and yet she responds with such grace and poise, even in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
I see it in my kids all the time, where they're expecting to be disciplined for something or to be sort of redirected in their behavior. And instead, Belinda will sit down with them and say, "Hey, tell me what's going on. You know, what's going on in your heart? Are you okay?" And she gives such a grace and a compassion. So, I think those two things are sparks for change across the world in a very difficult country where it's low levels of freedom and lots of poverty, and an expectation that when your child is sick. That's an omen from God that your child is probably going to die, and that's just you accept that. But you know the big long word for that is fatalism. Mm-hmm. And when that woman met one of my colleagues and said, "No, God wants your child to thrive, and let's talk about nutrition," and it was a therapeutic feeding program, and well, that so stunned that woman that, oh my gosh, you want my child to live, and my baby can thrive, and you're saying God cares about my child. It just turned her world upside down, and it not only changed how she thinks about her child and began to hope again, but it also challenged how she thinks about the universe and fatalism and God and what does God think about her. So that was a collision of sorts. I call that a beautiful collision in the book, and I think we experience them every day, especially if we slow down long enough to seek them and to find them and to listen to their message.
Yeah, no, I think that's a profound point. You know, I mean, these things can happen in life, and sometimes they can feel really difficult and really challenging, but they do seem to be the things that spark us to move forward, that change the path that we're on or to make the path more clear. You know, you also mentioned a really hopeful and compassionate theologian named Jürgen Moltmann. You quote him as saying, "The opposite of poverty is not wealth, but community." And I was wondering how that ties in here as well.
Yeah, we live, you know, in a society here in the United States and much of the West where, it's all about the economy and consumerism and materialism, and those things aren't necessarily bad. They're good, and I'm grateful that I'm an American, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's easy to think about poverty and wealth in very myopic terms or binary terms, which is about money and those things are important, and economics are important, and I don't want to discredit them. But when you think about poverty in its deeper sense, and when I meet people who are deeply entrenched in poverty and begin to ask the questions, it's not, in the end, just about they need more income. Mm-hmm. In the end, you have to ask the question, why is it that they don't have more income? Why is it that this country is so fallen behind the rest of the world? And by and large, it's because they're detached, they're isolated, they're left out from the world economy, from civil society, from the government. It might be a certain ethnicity that's left behind. It might be gender. A woman is left behind. So all of those things are relational, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you look at poverty through the lens of relationships, suddenly you think, oh my gosh, the answer to poverty, the opposite of poverty, isn't necessarily wealth. That is a component of it, but it's relationships. It's a grid of relationships, and suddenly it looks like community. The reason why I could never be really poor, or for that matter, you, Greg, is because if we lost our job today, we would reach out to one of our friends or our broader network, and we'd find a way forward. So there's a wealth in relationships there. We call it social capital. If we came across a tragedy like we were just talking about, my sister died, well, I was immediately able to reach out to people who have strong faith and draw upon my own faith. So there's something in community that really is the antidote to poverty, and you'll find that when a family or a mother or a father are so isolated or left out from society, often that's the deepest form of poverty, and therefore it's our task to reconnect them to community as the final solution.
You also write that the first step toward creating change is hope. How does that work?
Yeah, often people who are deeply entrenched in poverty and they don't find it within themselves to have any ideas or any wherewithal to take the very next step. They've lost hope, and despair is sort of the worst form of poverty. Mm-hmm. And often those people have a very low self-esteem. They believe they're second, third, or fourth class. They're not worth anything. They're not valuable. So it's just taken a deep toll on their human dignity. And so by hope, it's simply coming and starting with, rather than dumping aid, which we've done for so many years, and we've just tried to quickly solve the solution with, you know, sort of a charitable approach. I mean, people mean well to just, you know, give a dollar to the person on the street. Mm-hmm. You know, people mean well, but the first step really is to help create an environment of hope. What is it that this person should hope for? How can we see hope emerge in a person, in a community, in a neighborhood where hope is gone? And that takes time. It takes a process, but there's a couple, you know, there's a couple ideas and tools and ways that you can actually spark hope in a person, a community, a family, in a group. And it's phenomenal when you see that happen before your very eyes. And people mm-hmm. lift their eyes and say, wow, you mean there's something we can do together? You mean there's something we can do about the problem down at the end of the block? Or there's something we can do about our kids who are getting sick? Or there's a way that my children can be healthier than they are? I mean, that spark of hope, and when that hope is owned by a person in a community, mm-hmm. it is the beginning of something fantastic that can lead not only to overcoming poverty, but can actually permanently fix it and can be sustainable change.
Well, we only have about 5 minutes left, so as much as I would love to keep talking about the book, I hope you don't mind if we switch to talk a little bit about World Relief and the great work you're doing in Nepal right now. So you're CEO of World Relief, a nonprofit that works to empower the local church to serve the most vulnerable people. Tell us a bit about what you do with World Relief.
World Relief has been around a long time, 70 years, and started in a church in Boston. And the whole idea was, how can churches, which is this social network, the biggest in the world, 2 billion people strong, how can we help churches to help those who are most vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been doing that for years and tackled some of the greatest problems, from poverty to hunger to HIV/AIDS to moms whose children were dying before age 5 to tragedies and disasters. And one of those right now is in Nepal, and we've all heard about it in the news. And we have a local partner there in Nepal. It's been working there for years, and so we're working with them and through them to serve communities and to serve people. So we're working in a district not too far from the capital city, Kathmandu.
Mm-hmm.
It's an area of about 300,000 people, and in a relief situation like that, it is all about urgent food, access to water and sanitation to prevent cholera, and then it's about shelter, temporary and long term. So those are the activities we're doing for about 10% of that population, about 30,000 people in that district.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really excited about it because we're just seeing a group of people come together and really reach out to the Nepalese during a very, it's a very urgent and critical time.
Hmm. So how can our listeners support World Relief and specifically the efforts in Nepal right now?
Yeah, anybody who's interested can go online to worldbelief.org, and certainly you can give. I mean, it is one of the best ways to help, and whether that's $10 or $100 or $1,000, it does go straight to Nepal and helps those 30,000 people that we're talking about. And in our website, you can see a lot of different ways that you can help in some of those critical needs, whether it's Africa or Asia or places like Nepal. And there's ways to get involved as well. So take a look at our website. We'd love to have you join in a number of the things that we're doing, and look at our social media as well. So we're privileged to have you explore our website at worldbelief.org.
Now, I know that work you're doing is so important, but there's other great programs you have at World Relief as well. Can you tell our listeners about the Women Who Stand program? And if you wouldn't mind just keeping in mind, I have one more question I want to ask you at the very end, so we've got 2 minutes for this question.
Yeah, Women Who Stand is just a great group of people. We call it an affinity group that's connected with World Relief, and there's several Women Who Stand groups around the country, and they choose their own issue, a little bit like I was saying before, pick one issue and go deep, understand, you may travel there, you may give, you may get involved, and they've chosen two countries, Malawi and Cambodia, the Women Who Stand group here in Baltimore. But there's so much that can be done, and it just begins with taking that first step.
Hmm. So one question I asked every guest at the end of every show is, in your case, you know, how do you hope the lessons learned in your book Possible can help make the world a better place?
You know, if people read the book and they come away first inspired that they're not alone, that they're not left out, there's something they can do, and they take one step towards saying yes to the person down the road, their college group, the neighborhood, a village across the world, and take one step to, with hope in their heart, that there's something they can do. And that might just begin by telling a story, by sending a tweet or a post on Facebook. It might begin with a $5 gift. But if that is an outcome of reading the book, then that could redirect a life for years to come and could change the lives of not only their own life, but the lives of 5, 10, 15, 100 other people. And look, if we all just focused on one or two lives and we believe we could really have an impact on one or two lives, boy, you know, a couple billion people that, you know, choose to do something better, to be a better worldian, as you guys say, that can really change the world upside down. So it is a great day to be alive. Everybody can do something. It really is possible.
Well, that's an amazing story and an amazing book. I urge our listeners to listen. It sounds as if one of the common themes that we heard over and over again in this particular program, a key word here is hope. And hope is really what sparks so many things to happen. It's I think, where the collision starts to happen. It's where faith gets embedded, and it's where action based on that belief and faith that really takes place and takes root. So I urge you to read Stephen's works, to also get onto the website at World Relief, and to reach in and help these people in other parts of the world that so desperately need it. You can find out more about Stephen Bauman's work by going to StephenBauman.com. That's StephenBauman.com. Stephen, once again, thanks so much for joining us on Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you, Ray. It's been a pleasure to be with you for the last hour.
Very much so. Very much appreciated as well. Before we go, I want to remind our listeners that beginning in June, you can hear new episodes of Better Worldians Radio by going to BetterWorldiansRadio.com. As we end our show each week, we'd like to share our Better Worldians mission. We strive to make the world a better place by encouraging the very best in everyone. We focus on positive thinking, positive values, and positive actions. In short, our vision is to bring out the Better Worldians in everyone so that we can all make it a better world. Until next time, please be a Better Worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaVariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.